That's a whole different story. Let's step. That's a different conversation. I already said I'm not going to use the S word, so let's just skip that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Living a Life Through Books, the podcast about everything bookish. I'm your host, Dr. Shanaz Ahmed, and today is Book Club. Before I bring up our conversation, I wanted to say that your support of my podcast means a lot to me. The easiest way is to buy me a coffee. Go to buymeacoffee.com/LLTB podcast. Every coffee you buy me helps keep me alert and this podcast going. I'll add the link in the show notes, and I thank you. And let's get straight to Book Club.
So hello, everyone, and welcome to Book Club. So today we are doing The Rise and Fall of Great Powers by Tom Rackman. And what are your first thoughts about this book?
Well, the writer is good looking.
Okay.
I didn't even see that. That might be the saving grace of this book for me, because
I was like, okay, I take it. The writer was not wearing jumpsuit. It's okay. It's totally fine.
Shanna's, she's taken over from Rufat.
I don't know what's going on here, guys.
Rufat, somebody's taken over from you.
I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea what's going on. The writer is good looking. First thoughts on the book. The writer is good looking. Okay, excellent. Anyone?
No, not working. There we go.
I saw, you know what? I did see the picture. I mean, after bad. I finished the book, I saw the picture, but it wasn't like, that wasn't my first comment. But anyway, moving on. And Rufat, what are your first comments about the book?
Okay. Yeah.
So that's my first thought, you know, because I knew I picked the book and I had a feeling it's a kind of book that not everybody likes. But I thought at least Sophia will like the writer, find him handsome. So
she knows not.
Oh my God. So you picked the book because Sophia will find the writer handsome.
No.
I picked the book. I'm so lost. I don't even know where this book club is going to go today, but okay.
No. I'm saying I picked the book and I told you guys that I love the book. Not everybody likes it. He does it. Like, I think he's an amazing writer, but, I know that not everybody's going to like it. So I thought at least one positive point is the author is handsome. So I'll have Sophia on my side. That's all I was saying.
My reputation follows me.
Of course. I know. He's a cool dude for sure. Brains and beauty.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Does anyone have any comments about the book as a first thought? I mean, other than the writer is handsome and they want to do all kinds of stuff with him. That's a whole different story. That's a different conversation. Let's just go with the book. I mean, Sophia's like, no. It's just kind of like, I can look, but I can't order from the menu. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Window shopping.
Window shopping. Okay. Happy window shopping. Shana's.
I was a little confused because I did the audio version of it. And there, as Shana's, I was talking to you, it doesn't give us the years. It just gives us chapter one, chapter two, you know. So for me, I was a little confused because I have to remember, okay, I finished with, because you don't finish a particular, like 88, you don't finish all of 88, you know, you go on the chapters. So I was like, you know, oh, where did I leave? Because I'm not continuously listening, right? I listen with breaks. So for me, that was a little confusing. And then once you sent me the picture of all the chapters, it made it, oh, okay, I get it now, you know? So yes, it was for me, the audio, I think they have to do something with it. I don't know, I have no clue about it. But for me, that audio was a little confusing to begin with. And then, you know, once you get into it, then you understand, oh, it's three phases of her life, you know? Starts with when she was, 21? And then it goes back and then comes back when she's older. So that's what I finally figured out. So yeah, it was a little confusing for me to begin with. Or maybe the author wanted us to be confused. So we read the book till the end.
I don't think so. I think this is one of the few books I actually did the ebook off because I couldn't find the audio and I was just too stingy to use my last credit on Libro.fm to buy this book. I was like, I could use it, I could not. And I got it on Kindle, you know, from the library. So I said, okay, I will read it. And this was one book that I was glad I did a physical read because of that year, like seeing those chapter delineation and the years, I thought, you know, was good. For me, this book, my first thoughts were, I had two first thoughts. One is in the beginning, I thought, once there were wolves, you know, like kind of went from that. That was one of my first thoughts. But then after a few chapters, I'm like, no, this is more in line with Goldfinch. If you guys have read Goldfinch, it's very much in line with that book and not just the timelines, but just character journey felt very Goldfinch-ish. But okay, Dr. Jen, do you want first thoughts?
Sure. I thought it was interesting. I didn't love it. And I don't know if it's just that I had a hard time connecting with the characters. It was interesting. It was worth a read. I didn't love it.
Any other first thoughts? Sophia, do you want to mend your first thoughts other than just the author was handsome? Any bookish first thoughts? I mean,
no, it was, I liked it. I liked the dialogues. I liked the lines. I think the writing had a spark in it. He used some terminology. And I noted some of the quotes and I thought maybe I can use them time to time, like slop gravity. So that's something we can all maybe relate to, or he called internet a black hole, or all those kind of like little witticism and he's kind of coining terms and he's just, so that I love, that part I love. So I think the writing had a spark, it has a witticism, it has a shine to it. Character development, obviously we'll talk about it when we talk about characters. So the first 100 pages, you will be confused. You won't know where it is going. And I mean, at some time I was even inclined towards, let's read all the 2000 parts together and let's read all the 1988 parts together, because our minds, it's hard to think in a non-linear fashion all the time. We just like to, this linearity is something we are used to. So that was kind of confusing. But once you get the hang of it, I enjoyed it. It was a wild ride for me and I totally had fun.
It's my second time reading it and I loved it the first time. And I have to say, I loved it the second time as well. I had written a blog on it, I think a couple of years ago, and I didn't read it before reading the book again. And when I went back to it, it had exactly the same thoughts that I had put in years ago. And I just thought that it would change things for me, but it didn't. Definitely reminded me of Goldfinch, definitely reminded me of Dickens and his writing style and all. I love his choice of words, just like Sophia said. And I just thought the book had so much to absorb. I've somehow connected with the characters a lot. I just think, again, it also reminded me of White Oleander and All My Rage, where our childhood is so much at mercy of other people, which always makes me sad.
So the question becomes, what is this book about? What is this book about, really? Like, I mean, for me, I found it's a book on journeys. It's a book on growth.
Mm-hmm. Coming of age, in a sense, it was coming of age.
Yes, coming of age.
It was a little bit of a travelogue also. It was a little bit of a time capsule also of three different time periods. So it described those time periods pretty well. So you can basically, and we have, I mean, I was there in 1988. I was there in 2000. I was there in 2011. So it takes back, it's a nostalgic kind of flashback also. So it was about a lot of things and a lot of social and political commentary as well.
I know, I just...
It's fine.
Yeah, but I to me, it seemed like the book, like I said, talks about how our childhood and it's at mercy of other people, but how we can change it really hit me in the end again, the same way it did the first time when Thule is with Fog, and she goes, if I hadn't, you know, in the past, I would have kept on walking and not cared about him, or I would have said this to demean him, but I'm not that person anymore. I am changed person. So at such, like at that age, after going through so much trauma of life, there was so much hope that a person is a person, not like a person can be made. So let me rephrase it. So no matter what kind of situation or people are around you, if you are a nice person, you're gonna end up being nice, just like we talked about All My Rage and all that. So I thought that was really nice, that the hope, just because people can screw you up or have been wanting to screw you up, you can still become what you are if you have that willpower, or if you are a nice person. So I thought that's, to me, what the book was about, the hope, and the first thing that I said, that we are dependent upon other people, but in the end we are not.
I think what I felt was, not everything is black and white. You think, because Thule thought Humphrey is, you know, that's my take. You know, she was thinking about him in a certain way, thinking another character was the one which was, you know, helping her, doing stuff, everything, guiding her. And in the end, she found out that it was not what she thought. It was not that person. It was another person who did everything for her. So it was like, you know, how much you learn. And in life, not everything is black and white, you know? So that you need to be ready to, you know, take things which life throws at you and then figure out.
That's kind of threw me off a little bit, because I just felt like Van's character was just, you know, like at the end, it was this twist of like, no, it was always Humphrey all along. It wasn't Ven who cared about her. It was Humphrey. But the book, the way it portrayed it, the way it had discussed it, Ven was always there. And it just didn't make sense for Ven to be there as much as he was. I don't know. I was a little confused by that ending. But what else is this book about? We talked about coming of age. Not everything's black and white, travelogue. Dr. Chen, do we miss anything what this book's about?
I guess kind of tying into what Riffith was saying about powers and how people affect you in childhood. And I think it kind of ties in with the title as well. Like the rise and fall of great powers seems to me like the rise and fall of these, you know, parental figures and in her life and how they change throughout. Because as she thought originally her parental figure was Paul, and then it was kind of Ven, and it was kind of Sarah, but it wasn't. And then it was kind of Humphrey. And so I think it was like the rising and falling of her perception of those caregivers and in her lifetime. So, but then also how those people affected her through her life.
How, you know, innocent you are when you are young, and how experiences matures you. Whether you're a young 10-year-old or an old 10-year-old, it's all the experiences which mature you, and how she matures over a period of time with all the life's experiences.
And resilience, basically. She was very resilient. She went through so much, and she went by on so little. We all want, we do not want to be uprooted again and again. And she was like continuously uprooted. So she had no roots anywhere. So she was like a floater, and she still somehow managed, somehow survived. So she had absolutely no one to lean on, no one to rely on, to trust on. She was just relying on characters that she didn't even know who they were, but she was still resilient. So this abandonment, attachment, thinking, when will Sarah appear, when will Ven appear, or when will they disappear? I mean, all those things, and still she survived and she did pretty good. So it was about a strong, resilient character.
I just thought that this, to me, was also this kind of occurred to me this time, that this is also kind of an abuse, a childhood abuse, that doesn't necessarily mean anybody trying to, you know, taking advantage of you physically, but this was throughout a mental abuse that maybe doesn't come up as often. People grow up like this, that way, and there was no hitting anybody, there was no raping, but still it really screwed up a person. at least they did best to do that. So kind of a different definition of abuse.
So what do you think Thule should have been at the end, like her personality based on all this abuse? And was she better or worse than your expectations? Now that you know the book, now that you know what happened, the final character of Thule, is it justified?
She should have trust issues. She should definitely be damaged in the sense that how could someone go through such breach of trust like Van did to her and still go on trusting people? So she should definitely be a little bit damaged in that sense. But like I said, that she was resilient. So she had the capability of rising above it. And if you see the name of the bookstore where she ended, World's End, so maybe they were trying to make a point about that, that she was just kept floating in that entire world, continent to continent. And now she finally reached a destination. So she needed that foothold, that permanency in her life in some way, which she got. And hopefully that would repair her.
And with the, what's his name? Fogg? Was it Fogg?
Yeah,
I think I always thought right from the beginning of the book that there would be something with Thule and Fogg. Mm-hmm. Like it just started that there was something tender between them. And I was right. At the end of the book, there was something really, and it was very, very sweet. I loved that element of the book because you can't always have everything be negative. I loved that element of the book. And it was really touching, those last scenes before Humphrey dies, the discovering that this was the man who really took care of her or who really did everything mm-hmm. to make sure she was okay. Favorite scenes, not so favorite scenes. Like, I'll tell you what, for me, when I was reading about her, like going to Duncan and being like, oh yeah, I used to live here. And just the concept, you know, just the concept of someone doing that was like, I was like, oh my God. Like, I wouldn't even do that to a home I lived in. You, like, I literally, I don't even know if I would go to a home I lived in and be like, oh my gosh, I used to live in this home. I just thought I'd come in and say hi. I don't know if I would even do that. It's just, but just the concept of someone doing that. And then on top of it, doing it to try to extract information and things like I just, that scene just really got to me. And then there were a couple of other, not scenes, but the author's attention to detail was mm-hmm. like, it was mentioned Maxwell 2 LC cassette tape. And I'm going, oh my God, I remember what color that mm-hmm. tape was. I mean, like, I feel like, you know, I remember the tape. And it was just crazy. And then the concept of mixed tape or mixed CDs, you know, implying meanings in them, like, you know, a teenage mixtape. I mean, I know, I don't know what kids do these days with those things, but those things, those were my three real takeaway scenes kind of thing that really stuck with me with this book. Any scenes that really stuck with you, scenes that you couldn't stand? Oh, the other thing is, anytime Sarah showed up, I just, I felt like strangling her. I didn't even know what to do. Like in my brain, I'm just like, can I just hit the delete button? Like, I just want to delete this character. Like, can I take her and throw her out? Mentally, I didn't know what to do with the character personally. Like, I didn't even process the character. I didn't want the character and I didn't know what to do with the character. So those were scenes that just, yeah, those were my memorable scenes.
The situation, I would say, you know, more than the scene, which I didn't like, was when Sarah took her away from school to the party house where she meets Wen for the first time and just leaves her there. Amidst all the drinking, all the, all the partying, adult partying, you know, a small girl who's below 10 years old. At that time, I didn't know Sarah was a mother. But then, you know, you think, how can you do this? Even if it's not if it's, even if it's not your own child, still, how can you leave a child in such a situation, taking her away from school where, you know, she's under the responsibility of another person, you know, without that person knowing, you just take her and then come and leave her and then disappear. I was like, how can you do it? And you're a, you know, whether you're a mother or you're not a mother, irrespective, how can you do that to a child? That was like, I was really, you know, annoyed with Sarah at that point. And then in that situation, what made me laugh even in that situation was, it was so sad. She fell and then she was trampled on and everything. But then when she tried to get up or anything, all she could see was what? Butts and, hips. That was so hilarious to me when I imagined that little girl sitting in that position and then thinking of something hilarious also, you know? So that was like, yeah, she's making something out of a bad situation as well. So even in that young age, she's able to bring something whimsical, you know, into her life. That was something which stuck with me. And then how she does with Humphrey in the end, you know, she helps him, even though she doesn't want to do it because she thinks like, you know, he didn't do anything for her. She thought him as a burden, but still she came back, you know, after leaving him in the house, and then she comes back and helps him, you know, stays with him through the hurricane or cyclone or whatever it was, you know. So those stood with me.
Yeah, that Sarah scene stood with me too. The bar scene where she takes her,
that's a big no-no.
That was like, that stood with me, and I am like, you know, at that point, I don't think we knew she was her mother.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And even not knowing that she was her mother, it just did not, I just couldn't stomach it. And now as the book progresses, you find out she's her mother. And then when you think back at that scene, I'm just, like I said, I just want to hit the delete button on any mention of Sarah. Like, I just don't even want to mention her in this book club. Like, it's like, let's just take her off this book club, please. I know, you guys can mention Sarah, but I mean, that's how much, yeah, I couldn't process her. Scenes, memorable scenes, favorite scenes, hated scenes. Sophia?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the one of the good scenes were her reunion with Paul, her dad. I really found it very heartwarming. And all along, I mean, she took that boy, Max, with him and with her. And that whole scene, it kind of like warmed my heart, how he mentioned about everything that how she was taken away and how he was helping her and giving those payments, making those payments. So it kind of, because all along we just kept thinking, we were intrigued about Paul, that what happened to him, where did he go, how was he one of the, was he a victim, or was he kind of like someone who did something wrong to her in some way? Was he even the dad or not the dad, or someone who abducted her? So we kept wondering about Paul. So since he came clean, and I always liked Paul from the beginning. He felt like a true, genuine person to me, a very fatherly figure. So I didn't want him to turn out to be a villain, and he didn't. So that scene was a relief for me. So that was a really good scene. And I think one of the scenes and the Humphrey scenes towards the end were also very warm, when she was helping him, shaving him, and he just kept muttering about his past, and he kept telling her about the armband story and all, how his mind was stuck. So we all have aging parents, so I think we can relate how they are losing their memory, and it's so sad to see it. And the person doesn't have to give birth to you, but if you have seen their good times and how they were cognitive and how they were intelligent and they used to talk so well, and how they influence you, and now you see them in that state. So it is a sad situation, but relatable. And we can, the way he wrote it, I think he did justice to it. Two scenes that I didn't like at all. One of the scene when Sarah took her to the market where all kind of creatures were in the cages, That scene was gross, and I literally skipped over a few pages so I didn't have to read about all those creatures that were in the cages and whatever was being done to them. The other scene was the coming out of Ben, because I think that was not handled properly by the writer. First of all, Ben was never made to be a hero. So he was always a character of intrigue, a gray character, a mysterious character. So, but the way his true identity or his true intentions were revealed, that were like, here, he's the villain. Everything bad is about him. So I just didn't like that part, that how his whole personality just came out and he himself revealed him. Okay, that's what I am. Okay, why tell her now? You keep your facade or whatever is that. So, but all of a sudden, yeah, you were just like treating me, you were in love with me, but I was the villain all along. So I didn't see the reason why he all of a sudden realized that he should come clean or he should just expose himself. I don't know. So I didn't like that revelation.
I also felt like with Van that he was the villain, but he was throughout the book, there were times he was actually nice to her. I mean, that's the way it was written, because the author didn't want us to know he was the villain. And then suddenly just flipping the switch and going, oh, by the way, I've decided that Van is the villain. And his intentions were all about the money and blah, 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 blah. And that's it. And then you're like, what? Mm-hmm. Why? Was this contrived? Was this not contrived? You know, I didn't want to hate Van. I didn't want to like Van. Could I have been neutral to Van? Why are you doing this? You know, like that. But I agree with you on that, Sophia.
And his motive, $4,000 payment per month divided between him and Sarah was not that huge of a motive to just to abduct a young girl and just just completely deprive her of her education and all that. If there was a big inheritance lying in the background or he was going after something big, then it would have made more sense that, okay, this was riding on it. But just $4,000, and I'm kind of like even surprised in 1988, $4,000 was a big sum. And this was Paul even able to pay that amount? Was the writer thinking about this currency equivalence? And do people pay this much in child support? I don't know.
I think $4,000 is a lot of amount in 1988. Actually,
it is. It is.
I think it's a lot in 1988, because I know someone who was paying child support currently, like I'm talking 2-3 years ago, and I think the child support payment was in 1,000 something.
So that's what I was thinking. It was more like maybe blackmail money, not like really child support.
Right. I don't think there was any official child support through the government money. I just think it was all blackmail money, because they were like saying otherwise he would be something with the government. I didn't exactly know, but something with, if you don't pay me this money, I'm going to report you to the government that you did this or that, which really was just nothing that he did, but it was just twisted with the government. So I just felt like that's what it really was. Favorite scenes, not so favorite scenes.
My favorite scene was the Humphrey one. Definitely, I loved. Actually, all the scenes with Humphrey were pretty good to me. The last one was specifically very good. My most favorite scene was the end, like I said, when she walks with Fogg and then she corrects herself a couple of times that, you know, I would have done this in the past, but I wouldn't do it because I'm a nicer person, which also just showed me how forgiving she was. She went all the way to Van's home. She didn't kind of, you know, I wouldn't say like didn't tell his wife or anything. And she just came back and she had all that Van's past come up and her own past come up. So much done to you. I don't know, either she was a delayed reactor or something, but she handled it really well. Although I understand, like you said, Sophia, the writer didn't handle it very well, but as a character, I just thought that was such beautifully done that she just walked out on him and then she said, okay, whatever. So those couple of scenes were very good. I definitely did not like, and I wouldn't say I didn't like the scenes. They were very uncomfortable scenes. And I think they were written so beautifully that they did not even you know, I had to kind of sometimes stop reading or listening. I did both whenever Sarah came. And also when she was about to enter to people's home. And also when she was with Duncan's friend in their room, in his room. And he said that, how about you kiss me? And she goes like, sure. And I was like, please don't do that. But she ended up saying yes. And that was very uncomfortable. And I was like, wow, you know, but that also showed that she was raised that way and she thought it was okay because her motive was to make Vin happy and to get the money. That was very uncomfortable for me. I think those are again, Sarah, Annette, and whenever Paul was in distress, that also kind of, because I thought he was a good man and it was not nice to see him being taken. It was very clear that he was being taken advantage of by other people, including the guest that they had who tried to make him talk against the U.S. Embassy. And I think that's where they wanted to blackmail him for the money and whatever. So those were where I thought were pretty, you know, uncomfortable scenes.
I think mine were the same as Sophia's. My favorite was the reunion with Paul. When she goes there and he's just exactly the same as she remembers him. So, and just so down to earth and just very direct. And like, he's the complete opposite of Ben, right? If you could have polar opposites, I feel like they are completely that. And my other favorite part was the connection that Julie had with Mac, Duncan's son. Just they really connected together. And he wasn't feeling that kind of support connection from his parents. But she was able to provide a little bit of that for him. And that relationship for me kind of mimicked Humphrey with Thule a little bit, just their connection. But I am for me, I agree that the worst scenes were with Sarah. But as far as characters go, like I thought Ben was worse just because he was so blatantly manipulative and sneaky manipulative, whereas she was just completely out there, but like what you see is what you get. It's like you can obviously see that she is not in touch with reality for most of the time, but then you can kind of expect that, you know, but with Ben, it's, you never know like what's under the surface or what his motives are. And to me, that's worse.
Yeah, I would agree with Jen because I was thinking about Ben too, as you were speaking, because I think he presented himself or he didn't present himself. I don't know, but he groomed Thule from young, pretending to be her well-wisher. But I think selfishly, he was trying to get whatever he needed through her. So I think, yeah, from the get-go, you know, he was portrayed as a villain, but maybe, I don't know, I didn't figure it out a little bit later. But when you think back, you know, he's tried to get Thule to all the, you know, not the good things. Like, as you said, going into a person's house, you know, just like that and trying to get information so they can use it, for example. So I think that was something, you know, so equally bad. And Sarah seems to be on all our bad list.
The other thing with Sarah is she was so obviously a negative character. Like, so when you write, one of the things they tell you as a writer is that don't write someone who's all positive or don't write someone who's all negative. Mm-hmm. You've got to give each character, even a negative character, a motivation for being negative. Maybe that negative character loves his mom. Something that makes them where you're tied to them, like, you know, where you're like, okay, beholden to them a little bit. Or even a positive character, make them a little negative. So there's a realisticness to it because we're all a balance. So, but Sarah, unfortunately, I feel the author might have tried to add some comic relief in her behavior. Maybe that was the intention, but it landed very, very, very poorly. At least for me, it landed very poorly. And I just felt the author didn't give me anything about Sarah, anything positive, anything motivational about her. So So I think it was a, I hate to say it, but an author error on that part. But you know, the book in general was okay, so I'm going to let it go. Rifat, you have your hand up.
I was going to say that Sarah, to me, didn't look as much negative as a foolish. I don't like to use the word stupid or idiotic, but that's what she was. I think it wasn't that she was that negative. You know what I'm
delusional.
Saying?
Delusional. I think she was delusional.
Yeah, delusional, right?
I think so, she was mental issues.
Exactly.
She was just completely a character with mental issues. And now that makes me look bad that I don't like someone with mental issues or something, but it's just that was her only characteristic. She was high all the time. At least it felt like that, but that was her mental issues.
Right. And then she ended up where she, you know, she was like, it was a sorry state for her throughout. So it wasn't as much as like a cunning person. She wasn't that cunning. She was just like very stupid and foolish. I just wanted to say a couple of things about the surprise elements in the book that I really like was the last scene with Sarah when she turns 21 in the same time frame with Vin and with Humphrey. All three were really done nicely. There were a lot of scenes that I did not really appreciate that much. But these, like Sarah, when she said, you're going to turn 21 and she leaves to Italy the same time when Vin ties her shoelaces with each other so that she didn't get up. That was a very touchy scene for me that he left and then he never came back. And with Humphrey also, he goes out and he says, here's your passport and you can leave. Those were all pretty much the time when she turns 21 and when the author or when Tully comes, kind of brings everything together. That to me was a very nice kind of like, you know, bringing everything together scenes for me. I like that part a lot.
Yeah, but their reasons would be different because Ven and Sarah left because the money stopped.
Of course, yes.
And Humphrey left because Humphrey wanted to cut the cord. He wanted her to become independent.
Right. But the way it concluded, that's what I meant. You know, the way everything came, like, you know, because she goes, I haven't seen all of them in a long time. And she had no idea that when she turned 21, it was the support that was cut. That's why Ven and Sarah didn't find her very interesting anymore, right? So that's what we didn't know at that time. So the way he concluded, that's what I was saying, you know.
But then Humphrey, you know, cared for her after that. When that money stopped, it was Humphrey who took care of her, which was really like, which she didn't know. But I'm glad at least Humphrey took care of her and that money didn't go to Ven and Sarah. Let's put it that way. Yes. At least that money went straight to Tully as opposed to going to Ven and Sarah. So any other things about scenes? Themes, anything? Because after this, I really want to dig into characters, which we've been talking about. But after this, yeah. I really want to go into characters, pluses, minuses, you know, your favorites, your not so favorites, you know. So, okay, let's move to characters then. I already said I'm not going to use the S word, so let's just skip that. for me, I would say my favorite character really was the protagonist, was Tully. I mean, I loved her journey. I loved her experience and her processing. And there was just all of this internal strife within her, the pluses and the minuses and growing and I don't know, and surviving through all of it and learning. And I just, for me, it's Tully is my favorite. I will mention a character, which actually it's a scene also, I'm kind of backtracking, is Duncan's wife. There was a mini scene where she randomly mentions to Tully about how she's not happy in the marriage. It just kind of came in. It was one of these things. I'm just going to throw the scene in because I'm bored. I'm writing. I'm at 280 words. I need 280 pages. I need 20 more pages. Duncan's wife tells Tully that she doesn't like Duncan. Okay, there you go. It was one of those like afterthoughts. I'm just going to throw this in. I had no idea what the F that was. I don't get it. It just was this random loose end. It started off as a loose end and I felt it ended as a loose end. So because it's also character, but yeah, that was interesting. And also his wife just being accepting of Tully. Like, I don't know how comfortable I would feel if my husband's ex-girlfriend wanted to come and stay with me. I will tell you how comfortable I'll feel. I'll be like, heck no. There is no way in hell you're having your ex-girlfriend come in, even for coffee. I mean, I'm not even talking about staying. She's not even welcome inside the threshold of my home, okay? That's how I feel about that. But here's this woman welcoming Thule with open arms. This is Duncan's ex-girlfriend. That concept was just kind of like, what is going on here? Really, that surprised me quite a bit. Again, you know, when you talk about really good characters, you know, oh, she's so sweet. Oh, we really like her. Really? Come on. I don't know. So there's that. Any other characters, anybody? People you like, people you didn't like? Yes, Shanaz.
For me, I liked, of course, Thule, that's known, but I liked Humphrey.
Yeah,
you know, from young, he'd been through a lot too. He wanted to do something. He wanted to go with his mother. He wanted to become, in the theater. But then he, because of his sister, he wanted to do, you know, go into something allied with medicine. So he did pharmacology, you know, and then became a pharmacist. So I think he's been through a lot, and then he changes, like, you know, because at the beginning, I really thought he was from Soviet Union, the way he spoke, the way he behaved and everything. And then when you start to learn, you know, get to know about his character, I was like, he was a very lovable character who looked after Thule so well, you know, even though he didn't have kids on his own, he didn't marry over, you know. So I thought, for me, Humphrey, I like that character a lot too. And as you said about, that was Bridget, right? Duncan's wife. And when she says, as you say, suddenly to Thule, like, you know, I'm not happy in that marriage. And then Thule ends with, you know, it with her thought saying that, she asked her, oh, do you have some affair with somebody in the office? And she says, not yet. Thule, for sure, she says, yeah, she is going to have, you know, in her mind, she says, oh, yeah, she's going to have an affair. I mean, you know, she's going to stray. So that was hilarious to me as well, you know. Suddenly you say something and then you come to a conclusion. But maybe, you know, like, she just needed somebody to talk to in a marriage which was failing. So she just needed an adult companionship, as she said, you know, in a few previous passages before. Because it can get to be a crazy household with 3 and 4 kids, especially one with a special needs. It can get crazy. So my character, you know, who I liked was Humphrey, another one. And not so favorite was, of course, Sarah. And I didn't like her from the beginning. Some lightheaded, dull-headed, I don't know what. All the adjectives, you know. So for me, I didn't like her.
I think I always talk about something which is non-living as a character. And in this case, it was a bookstore. And this is not the only book about a bookstore. I think a few months ago, I read another book, which was The Storied Life of A.J. Fikri. I don't know if you guys have read it or not. So it was also about, and I think they're maybe making a movie on it also. So it was also a charming novel for my school book club. I read it. So in that also, the bookstore played a major role. And here also, whenever that part of 2011 appeared, the bookstore seemed to breathe and has its own life and has its own wit. And if you see how they talked about the shelves that were labeled in a very funny way, artists who were unpleasant to their spouses, history, the dull bits, books you pretend to have read, but you haven't. So those are the titles on the shelves, and very interesting. For a small town and a failing bookstore to have that much personality, that it was also the living quarter, and everything there seemed to have some kind of relationship to the character. And you just want to go there and breathe in there for some time and maybe sit there and have coffee. So that bookstore is one of my favorite characters. And obviously, we all loved Humphrey. Especially after the big reveal, but even before the reveal, although he was shown as someone who was also always sitting, doing nothing, and what we call like just a slob, basically. But he had a certain caring attitude towards him from the beginning, and we could see that he cared about Tuli. And she was not schooled, but he gave her all the education she always wanted. In a different way, she was kind of like homeschooled by Humphrey. So she was not left illiterate, or she was not left uneducated. So she did get the kind of education that made her what she was, or only due to this one single guy. So the kind of lines Humphrey used to say, again, he would say that Sir Isaac Newton and I, we are two peas in one pod. Or he would say that if all the great thinkers would appear in in that little place, they would all love his company. And I think his was one comment was, "You look like a bear who is hyperbaiting." What is hyperbaiting?
Oh, I love that scene. It was a whole bunch of words like that in that scene. It was like a whole bunch of words in that. I remember that page. It was so cute.
All that wordplay. I can imagine someone hyperbaiting, and I was like, this guy needs to stop. And I think Tuli did get her wit from there, although Tuli had her spark from even before she met Humphrey, because she looked at the menu and she said, okay, unique leg of camel, isn't every leg of camel one of a kind? So Tuli, Humphrey, and the bookstore, those are my three favorite characters. Obviously, I also didn't like Sarah. I didn't care about Ben at all. He was whatever for me. So I was never, I mean, he was shown as a hero towards all through the novel, but he never looked like a hero to me. He looked like someone slimy, and we were just waiting for that slime to show. And we just thought it would come as a surprise but he just like delivered a monologue and gave that slime away. So that was kind of a letdown for me. And all the unnecessary characters, I don't think they added anything to the novel. I mean, some little minor characters did add, like that guy Savvy from Uganda. So he did contribute to the story, and later on Ben took his identity. So obviously he had a major role. But if you talk about other characters like Emerson or Nolene, so quite a lot of pages were spent developing their life or who they were, but they didn't accelerate or the story, or they didn't play any. If you take them out, nothing will be taken away from the story. Or that guy with whom she hooked up when she was seeing Humphrey, the caretaker's son. So those minor characters, I don't think they were necessary at all in the novel. Maybe they were just thrown in to show her vulnerability at time, or some of the conflicts, but I don't think they propel the story at all. So yeah, those are my characters.
I was frustrated with Nolene, but I just also felt like, you know, so many times, I think we've done books where, what was that book where her sister... that book with the Italian family, you know, where her sister tells the husband about how her sister wants to escape, and, you know, like how her sister's stashing money, you know, all that stuff. That was Nolene's character to me, in the sense that, oh, I hate Emerson. Okay, let's boy bash. Let's talk everything. Let's boy bash today. Let's have this, you know, this party about how we hate men, and tell me more things you hate about Emerson. Let's do it. And then boom, overnight flip, and just became total flip, and became like spilling Tuli's secrets. And I was just, that was not, did not sit well with me, those scenes, those characters. And you're right. I don't know what purpose they served other than shock effect, emotional effect, whatever else, like the whole Duncan's wife effect. You know, that's... I think the author, like I said, I need another 20 pages, or I just need to throw in some spice here. Let me just do this. More characters and people. Okay, Rifat?
Yeah, I was going to say that the Noelle or Nolene, I don't remember her name, but I think that was whatever they talked became the reason actually for Thule to leave. And that's how Xavi's money was saved. Otherwise, they were about to give the money and something. So to me, she, that was the breaking point when she thought, okay, she said goodbye to Duncan and she left. So I think that was the introduction of the character, or maybe introduction of the scene where she actually reveals Thule's secret on her face. That became, otherwise Xavi would have, and Duncan's parents would have invested in all that. And I feel really good about that fact that the no money was lost on that, because that's when she went, she turned 21 and all that thing happened. So Bridget's, I didn't like Bridget's character, but those are the kind of people we do come across. So again, I always say they're good characters about people that we like or we don't like, and then their characters, how the author developed them. So I think he did a good job with Sarah's character in developing the fakest person you can ever meet. So really, I think Ven and Sarah are public education for people. People should know about those kind of personalities. But as a person, of course, I didn't like a negative character. Nobody likes, of course, a flaky character. No one likes, but he developed them really nice. Not Ven as much. I think I didn't like the way he developed Ven's character, but Sarah, Humphrey, Paul was a very nice character for me. My favorite was Thule for sure. I really like women when they go through a lot and then they rise and then they become positive instead of coming out as a negative person. Or she did not even once thought that she was a victim. She accepted it, she forgave, she moved on. And I don't know how much energy or how much boldness you need to have in order to become that, but that's a very good inspirational character for me. So Vince, so he talks about Sarah's childhood and background, because her dad was also kind of like that. He talks about Humphrey, why Humphrey connected to little girl because of his own sister. Even Paul's past was brought up. What was not satisfying was he didn't tell us, the author didn't tell us why Ven became what he became. So it's nice to go back a generation before and say, this is what happened to the person and that's why he became that. So I think that way characterization of Ven wasn't very nice to me. It was like not very expert as far as I'm concerned. Bridget's thing was also, I did not like that kind of like, to me, she was almost flaky too, but when she was patient, she was a good mother and all that. But I think they kind of introduced that dot-com era where the IT was coming and people were getting divorced. So I think that snippet was just there to bring back that time. And other than that, the bookstore, of course, that was a beautiful thing. I know, Sophia, you always pick up that thing. And I was reading about the writer, and he himself said that I would love to, you know, be in, and he's well traveled England and all that. And he goes, I love that, those kind of bookstores. And I think he also mentioned, that's when I read him his interview a long time ago, then everything in the book changes, the timelines and everything. The only thing that didn't change was the books. And he said it's the book that, whether it was like the Stuart Mill's essays or Dickens or Nicholas Nickleby, it was like whether somebody read it 100 years ago or today, that connects people. Whether you read it in England or in, you know, America, those things connected. And I think he had a quote too, she says people kept their books, she thought, not because they were likely to read them again, but because these objects contain the past, the texture of being oneself at a particular place, at a particular time, each volume a piece of one's intellect, it was a long, beautiful quote. But definitely, I think that he's literary person, so he, all the writers are, of course. So he had a very deep connection with the bookstore itself. And he goes, like, it's not a real bookstore, but he put together everything that he has been around and seen, those, like, you know, secondhand bookstores, and he put it there. So definitely, you know, all that.
Yeah, I was also going to say something about that, Rifat. So I had it in my phone as well. But then, yeah, because, you know, that is something which I'm sure every person who reads books can connect to, you know, because I still have all the books my kids have read from day one. And it's just a big clutter in the house. But still, you know, each book has a memory attached to it. So, you know, you don't feel like giving it away, you know. So I fully got that when, you know, I read that. I'm like, oh my God, this is something which I can totally relate to. You know, so I picked it up and I kept it also. And you exactly, you tell me that. Yeah, I was thinking about it too. That's what I wanted to add. Oh my God, that's totally, I get that.
I love that, you know, the bookstore is a character because, I mean, who among us does not like bookstores? And who doesn't like those small, cute, eclectic bookstores? Like I'll still, like Brad and I, we went to Oregon. It was in Redmond, Oregon. There was this cute little bookstore and all the books were so beautifully curated. Like the books in the store, I was, you know, as a reader, as someone who's been exposed to so many books, I was like, wow, how did you pick this book and this book? Well, interesting enough, I ended up talking to the people at the bookstore. They kept the shop open. I didn't even realize for an hour longer than it was closed. They were talking to us. And then the next day, they were like, you have to meet the owner. Please come back. So we went back the next day and the owner of the bookshop is there talking to us about how he curates the books and what I liked about. I mean, and it's just this cute character of this in this place and time. And you don't get that, you know, from like the big bookstores, but that kind of a thing. And to think it's in this little town in England, you know, and it was just, and all those cute titles and just, oh my gosh, it's just, yes, beautiful. Yes, the bookstore is an amazing character. And to have her and Foggs in it, you know, so cute. Yeah. You've got mail. Yes, you've got mail. Exactly. Yeah. You know, that's right, Rafat. I mean, it's that kind of a, you know, it's not big, bad Fox books. You know?
A cute name, too. A cute name. World's End.
Yes. Yeah, World's End. Name. Yes. So very, very, very cute.
Yeah.
Dr. Jen, favorite characters? Did you go already? I'm like so lost right now. No.
No, I think you guys covered everything. The only thing that I would add is that I really liked Duncan. Specifically, I really liked how he actually sought out her dad and then took care of him, basically. He was just such a good guy. Man, I just want to give him a hug, right? But like at the same time, like by his middle life, he was falling into what Humphrey would have called that trivial life, right? Where he's just, you know, being conventional and watching TV and yelling at the news anchors. And but he was still like at heart, like just such a good person. So I appreciated that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, how many of us would go out of our way to do that? Like, it was just like, yeah, it was very, very kind, very mind blowing. Yes, Duncan was a definitely great character. Anything else about themes, characters, scenes? Oh, Shauna wants to say something. No.
Yeah, I remembered suddenly when she was in that party place, she asked the pianist to play the piano. And then he suddenly kisses her in the mouth, which was like, ew, no way, you know? I mean, I can get what the 9-year-old was thinking at that moment, you know? Who would do that, you know, unless he's a pervert? I don't know. I don't want to use the word, but still, you know, that was like, you know, I felt so bad for her in that situation. You know, she just innocently asked him to play a piano piece, you know, a piece, and then this guy plays it, and then really? There are so many other places. You could kiss her on the cheek. I don't mind that, but not, oh, that was like, you know, suddenly it was so creeping out to me, you know. And that was one thing which also made me annoyed and more angry with Sarah for leaving her in such a situation when she should have been looking out for her, you know, whatever you're doing. Ew, I can't think about it.
You know, the other scene is towards the end with Humphrey. She's there and it's one of those days when Humphrey has his better days and the neighbor is the volume is too loud and she goes and says, you know, turn it down, and they turn the volume up.
Yeah.
that was just, you know, I just, my heart was just like, oh my God, the one good day that she's having with Humphrey, really? Like, really? Oh, that was like heart-wrenching in a lot of ways. It was just like, I couldn't, that scene just got to me too. So, okay, friends, let's, we're almost an hour. So let's do this final, you know, title, cover, and final rating. I'm going to go with Dr. Jen first because I know, you know, I just want to potentially go with a higher rating towards the end, maybe end on a higher note. So we'll end with Rifat. We'll start with Dr. Chen. Yeah.
All right. So cover I thought was okay. I kind of like the kind of side eye look where it's kind of like looking up and kind of away, and it kind of makes sense with how people were not typically upfront about what they were seeing or thinking in this book. So I guess it's okay. Like, maybe I'd give it a 3.5. And then the title, I think I like the title a little bit more, thinking about how the powers of the people in your life and your role models and parental figures kind of coming and going. And it kind of plays on another historical book with a very similar title, talking about world events and economic and military history and such. So it makes sense. I'd give the title a 4. And then overall, I thought it was fine. I thought it was fine. There were parts that I liked. There were characters that I liked. I liked the whimsical dialogue. I thought that was really fun with Thule. I just had a hard time connecting with some of the characters and really like getting into it. So I'd say overall, like, I'd give it a 3.5.
Okay, I'll go. I'm not enamored by the title at all. It's almost a 1 for me because The Rise and Fall of Great Powers, it still feels like it's a nonfiction history book. It does not feel like what it is at all. Even after reading it, I just, huge disconnect for me personally. So the title, I'd give it a 1. The cover, I'd maybe give it a 2. It's okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, I don't know. I just, again, disconnect. But the book in general, I give it a 4. I mean, it wasn't like a 5, because it didn't blow my mind. I just thought it was cute, and I thought there were heartwarming scenes to it. So that's why I give it a 4. I did not dislike it, but I did not love it. So I liked it. So that's where it's a 4. Now, it's interesting, would I recommend someone to read the book? I don't know. I mean, I may be like, hey, if you want to try it, just try it. I mean, you may like it, you may not like it. It's interesting. That's how I would present the book, but I'm not going to run up to the rooftops and force someone to read the book. So that's my thought. Shanas?
For me, I thought the cover was like, you know, it's about a bookstore. It's about books. If you look, I mean, that's what I think, because it's all books. So maybe it just was, yeah, it was just, you know, in a way it was telling us, oh, it's all about books. Rifat's got it. Yeah, it's all books.
We have different covers.
We have different covers. I had the cover Shanaz had.
No, I have the cover which Rifat and Sophia have. So for me, it was like, yeah, it's a perfect way of saying there's something connected with books, and which, you know, throughout it's like Humphrey's into books, she's into books, fog, and so many things. The bookstore as Sophia's main character, you know. So I think the cover I would give a 4. The title, me too. I was like, you know, for me it was the disconnect again. The Rise and Fall, because anytime you think Rise and Fall, I'm thinking about the nonfiction, you know, the book. So for me, I think he could have chosen a different title. I don't know. So maybe title, I'll give a 2, as you know. And the book as well, you know, for me, I'll give a 4. There were good parts, there were negative parts, but I could feel some of the things. I could connect to some of the things, like this big quote about the books. So for me, 4. So that's my take.
Yeah, I will give the, I didn't like the title at all, because I would not pick this book based on the basis of title. I would think that this is about politics, and this is about maybe empires or political parties. So I will not, unless someone recommend it, I will not go and pick it up. I like the title you have, Shehnaz. I think that title was more intriguing and it has that mystery element. And so I would give that title a 4 because we have 2 different titles. So yeah, I like this title more. I didn't like this title. So I think this title is just okay. But
what do you mean? Both the titles are the same.
No.
I mean the cover?
Oh, sorry. Cover.
Okay, I got confused. Okay.
Yeah, cover. So the title I will give 2 because I found it confusing. The cover, I will give your cover a 4, my cover a 2, because the cover you have and Jen has, that cover is different from this cover. So I think it just has two different artists did it. So I like that cover, the one you showed. It has a picture of a girl and all that. For cover, it's a toss-up between 4 and 2, depending on which cover you use. But if we count the inner flap, also we'll add a point. So just 1 point. 1 point. It's really...
Just for the listeners of this podcast, the inner flap has this handsome dude, supposedly, according to Sophia. She thinks the author is handsome, so the inner flap has the author, so she's adding extra points to the cover. All right, keep going.
Yeah. Okay. So, and if this book has, if they ever make a movie out of the book, I think they should keep the title. They should not keep this title. They should retitle it as Thule. I think that will be a nice, intriguing, mysterious, and nice title that will make an interesting movie. As far as the book goes, so it was delicious. I devoured it just like pie, but I also found it irrational. So I'll give it 3.14.
I love Sophia's ratings. It's like pie. Okay.
I would like the name Book World's End too.
Ooh, World's End.
Yeah, well, World's End. It's a little intriguing to me.
World's End would be good too, but World's End also has a very historic ring has a very non-fiction ring to it.
Along with this cover, which we have, you know, about the books, different forms of books, and then World's End.
Rifat, before you go, I am actually complete opposite of you, Sophia. The cover you have with the books, I like that way better than the cover me and Dr. Jen have. Like, so if I had your cover, I might have been more softened by the book because the cover I felt was more whimsical, your cover. Ours was very stern and very sterile, I felt. Very historic. So that was my thought, but Rifat, you.
I told you guys before, I recommended 2 times. You guys are not going to like it. It's not a 5-star for you, but I like it. So I actually, talking about the cover and the title, I picked this book up from a secondhand store, and I was just going on the shelves and everything. I loved the cover because it had this vintage books look on it. And also, as soon as I opened, the first couple of sentences tell that she has a bookstore in England. So that caught my attention right away. I was like, I didn't even get to Mr. Richmond's picture here. So you can see I love books more than the guy.
Good to know, Rifa.
We are different people.
Of course. So, no, but I didn't mind it. That was the added bonus, but I mean, you're so right. I would not have picked the book if it just said The Rise and Fall, but as soon as I saw the picture and everything, and it happened in the first 5-10 seconds or whatever, 20-30 seconds, and I picked it up. Nobody had ever told me about Tom Redman, or I'd never heard about him. This was whatever, 4 or 5 years ago, and I picked the book. And very next to this book was his other book, Imperfectionist, and I picked both of them. First, I read this, then I read this. I am definitely aware of some of the flaws of the books that it had, and I said, like, few scenes were redundant, even the character of Vin, which should have been more covered, left me kind of wanting more about his past. I cannot not like a book which has so many references of Dickens and other you know, historical authors and Nicholas Nickleby itself. It's my childhood read. I love seeing that she carries that book. It's a vintage edition, those things. And it's going into too much details, but it was so funny. I finished the book and I remember suddenly that Jane Austen's Mansfield Park the writer has so many things from these authors that he has these little, you know, that he sprinkles. So in Mansfield Park, the whole book is written from the heroine's perspective. And the last paragraph, if you guys have read it, or if you guys are, as you know, crazy I am about classic writers, that she in the end changes it to the hero's perspective, the last couple of paragraphs. And he does exactly the same. If you read the last paragraph or two are from Fogg's perspective, suddenly the whole book is about Tully's, the way she's thinking. And so I says, oh my God, that reminds me of Mansfield Park. And when I reread the blog last night, after the blog that I wrote about it, and I had mentioned that in that book too. So things like these, when they stick for me, so it has a romanticism for me. So I love these things and they kind of win me over whatever the flaws the book have. I always say if I read a book again, that means it's a 5. If I recommend it to people, it's a 5. I did read it again. I will read it if 10 years from now, it would be my, like, you know, retirement book for sure. I recommended you guys with a reservation, and I wouldn't recommend it to everybody. And it reminds me of Donna Tartt's Goldfinch. Not everybody liked it, but people who love Dickens, they would like this book. They loved Donna Tartt's book as well. So that's my romance or love with the book. I just like the vintage era. I just liked how he put everything together. Second thing, I always like a book written by a person who is not a writer first. I love books written by journalists. They have a completely different perspective, the way they write the books. What was her name? Wilkerson, the cast. She's a journalist. The Letters of No Man's Land that we read, journalist. Anybody who, political science, journalism, we talked about Mohsin Hamid the other day. I love when people like those who have an amazing background write these books. So that those are all my points of loving this book. For me, it was a 5. And the cover and the title, like I said, within the first 30 seconds, I was hooked on. I got the book. So that tells me that it was a good, I don't know how to rate it per se, maybe 3, 4, whatever. It doesn't matter. But it did get me to buy the book.
Okay. This is why I like Rifat and Book Club, because she's always got this other perspective and she always brings out these crazy books that you're like, what the heck am I reading? You know, if it's a Rifat book, you always have to be like, what is going on? But it's all good. And so that's pretty much it for this episode of Book Club. And thank you all for coming.
Before I go, if you loved this episode or any of my previous episodes, please take a moment to write me a review on Apple Podcasts. Please share this podcast with your family and friends and through your social media channels. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram on Living a Life Through Books. I'm also on Clubhouse. Look me up by name. I'm on TikTok. My tag is at Dr. Shanaz Ahmed. You can reach me through email. My address is livingalifethroughbooks@gmail.com. My website is shanazahmed.com. That is shanazahmed.com. The opening and closing music to this and all my previous episodes was composed by my husband, Brad Slavik. I'm Dr. Shanaz Ahmed with Living a Life Through Books signing off. Remember to water the seeds within you. It's time.